Hello, listeners. You are listening to another episode of your favorite podcast. That's Entertainment. I am your pop culture maven, Jeff Malone. And usually with me is my co-host, my Aunt Beth Woods. But actually, it's another episode with a special guest host, special guest co-host. You've heard him before. I'm sure you love him. It's my good friend Jeff Smith from all the way across I-80. Is that how you'd get from New York to your area?
Oh yeah, no, you got the path down to something there, right, Jeff? Yeah, no, I-80 it is. Yes.
Okay, yeah, all the way over to Western PA. It's my good friend Jeff Smith. We bring him, and if you're looking at the calendar. And you know where mine and Jeff's interests most overlap, then you know what this is all about. It's time to say, oh my, because we're wrapping up March Madness. It's another great year of college basketball. We had a full-length episode on it about 2 years ago, and now we've started an entertaining tradition of just convening and maybe crying, but maybe shedding a few tears over what happened the past few weeks in the men's and women's Division I college basketball tournaments. So, Jeff, how many hours do you estimate you've watched of college basketball in the last 3 weeks?
Well, I tell you what, Jeff, it's been a lot of long nights, and usually the killer is when you see those tip times for the last games of the night just creep up and up and past what they are supposed to be. And yeah, it's definitely not a time to be catching up on sleep, that's for sure. But that's what the rest of April will be all about. Hey, I have to ask you in your little intro there, your little oh my, was that homage to Dick Enberg? Because that was one of his catchphrases. And he was always, I thought, a very underrated tournament announcer.
That was the intention, and I actually meant to do that at the very beginning of my intro, but luckily I caught myself soon enough. You know, I would have been horrified if we'd gone through this whole entire recording without including that.
I don't know if we could do it on the spot, but I don't know. Maybe like a top five tournament announcers. I think Dick Enberg's on there for me. But
well, I mean, save that thought. I mean, I didn't prepare that, but
I know.
We could do that, and it would be an especially appropriate time to do that this year, I would think. But anyway, so what was I about to say? So I want to give everyone context here. So we were talking about the 2024 edition. We were recording on Monday afternoon. We've just caught the 2024 clips. Our eyes are still working, as far as I can tell. So the women's final has already concluded, but the men's final has not yet. This was the best time for our schedules to overlap. So we'll be recapping all the other games, but that game we'll be predicting. And I don't, maybe if we feel like it, we'll edit in after the fact some reactions to tonight's UConn-Purdue men's final, if there needs to be something that needs to be said. But yeah. Okay, so I've already given away the topic for today's episode, but just to be thorough, on That's Entertainment, the premise is we pick a pop culture topic and discuss it according to the 3S, first, favorite, and forever. But we already did that with March Madness, so now we'll just focus on the last part, the forever. So, yeah. I'll let my guests jump in. What are your main overall reactions to this year's edition of the Madness?
Well, I feel like the women's side is where I feel like this year more than ever, just the way the ratings have just taken off and just the interest level in general, where I feel like this is the year I watched the women's tournament more than I have any year in the past. Not that it hasn't been good in the past. I know it has, but this year especially, you had some real good real interesting storylines kind of take shape as the tournament went on, and even the finals game yesterday. I mean, I know South Carolina, what they wound up winning by 12. It did seem like at the
Sorry.
end Iowa just kind of that you just saw the look of defeat on them. But the girls' games were very captivating, I thought, and I'll be curious to see that, as the years continue here, like are we going to try to take this to more of a level like the men's tournament looks, where I know a lot of times the women's games, you have one of the schools in that first round in those pods that they host. Like, are we looking at maybe expanding this to like bigger venues as well, kind of like what the men's have or not? It'll be interesting to see, I feel, because I don't know. I feel like maybe there's a lot of people out there like me that kind of just really took off and got more interested in it this year, especially with some of the storylines on the girls' side, whether it was the undefeated South Carolina team or Caitlin Clark or even the perennial favorites, usually UConn, kind of making their run from not on the one line too. So that all was really interesting to me. And Jeff, I don't know about you. I know you always do watch the women's tournament a fair amount. Did you feel like you wound up watching more this year than past, or about the same?
Probably the same amount as the last few years because I was just watching it as much as possible anyway. I mean, like the men's round of 64 starts on a Thursday, and then the women's starts the very next day on that Friday. So that first Friday is what you have a total of 32 games combined with men's and women's. And it's just exhausting keeping up with it all. So I'm trying to, just I've got the apps open, I've got an extra window open on my computer, just bouncing back and forth to whichever game is most competitive. So I'm, like the entire day, or at least as long as I'm home, I've got a game on. And then, the days where only the women, there's only women's games, then it's easier. I'll make sure to have whatever game is on at the moment. So, I mean, I'm pretty much watching as many games as possible. But I think this year it felt like I had more of a rooting interest or more of a storyline interest in more games than usual. I had taken a bet on Iowa at the beginning of the season to win it all. And I mean, I've just been a fan of Caitlin Clark for the past few years, and I was excited that they were playing LSU in the Elite Eight because that was a rematch of last year's title game, and the matchup against South Carolina was also a rematch. So, I mean, yeah, they didn't have to convince me to watch it. I was already drawn in, but I feel like, yeah, I feel like my attention was captivated even more than usual.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. And it's always interesting, I feel, on the women's side. It's just, you don't see the same number of upsets that you do in the men's side. And I mean,
Although
if you're someone
they did have a 16 beat a one before the men ever did.
that is true. Yes. But it just feels like for the most part, there's definitely a talent discrepancy between those higher seeds and then the lower seeds that come from the mid majors. And that's another thing. Like, let's see what happens in the next 15 to 20 years as well. Will that gap kind of shrink in a sense too, where it'll be interesting to see, because I definitely can see potential for this getting bigger and bigger and more interesting. And I think more people will continue following along because, okay, what's not to say next year? I mean, UConn's bringing back, it seems like, a good chunk of their team, and then Paige Bueckers becomes kind of what Caitlin Clark was as well, what she was touted to be too. So,
Well, in the men's game, you have a lot of guys not even going to college. Like they'll go straight to, I mean, what are the teams that are like just made for? Like they'll, since you have to be at least 19 to be drafted into the NBA, but they don't want to go to college. They just, I mean, it's not the G League. What is it? I don't even know what the teams are.
No, there is a team in, oh, I guess after this year, I guess they're folding up, but it's called the G League Ignite. So it's this team that does play in that league of, yeah, you're right, those draft eligible players for next year. And it does, like, I've been curious just jumping on and seeing, like, okay, NBA mock draft wise, who are these guys in the tournament going high? And a lot of the top five, six picks are guys who are doing that instead of in the college game. So it's like, oh, geez, okay.
Yeah. So like the best, a lot of the best young men's basketball players aren't even playing college ball. So there's not as much of a talent disparity between the blue blood programs and the smaller schools as there was 10 years ago. But with in the women's game, the disparity might be growing because the top schools are, it feels like they're investing more, and the WNBA is getting more attention. So the you have these star players at the big schools, but the small schools don't have the resources, so they're getting left behind for the moment. But I don't know, maybe some schools along there will be able to find the opportunity, because there are a few mid-major women's teams that have done well lately, like Middle Tennessee State and South Dakota State, I think have made it. I think they've both made it like at least three tournaments in a row.
And it was interesting too to see, I guess, the whole there's a storyline in the winter too with that Gonzaga women's team. They just reeled off a bunch of wins in a row too. It was kind of cool to keep track of also.
And when in Gonzaga history has the women's team had a higher seed in the tournament than the men?
Yeah, that's a good point. Was this the first time? Do you know the answer?
I mean, it was the first time that I ever noticed it.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, because the last several years, Gonzaga's been like, I mean, a five seed this year. That's pretty low for them. Usually they're a one seed or close to it. Okay, so yeah, we covered a lot of the storylines there. Let me see if you agree with this. I think, and I would have to look up to see if this has ever been the case, but there's a little subjectivity in this too. But I think this year we got the top two teams for both the men and the women's in the finals matchup. And I think you can, that's undoubtedly true about South Carolina being the number one women's team. You can maybe make an argument for some other teams besides Iowa as the number two team, but I think the Hawkeyes made enough of a case for themselves at the end of the season. And then in the men's, I really don't think you can pick anyone besides UConn or Purdue.
No, I agree. I mean, Houston would have been the closest, but no, I mean, just with the players on both those teams, I agree.
Yeah, and
I know they mentioned in 2021 that first tournament after COVID came back, you did get Gonzaga and Baylor in the finals on the men's side. I don't know what the women's final was.
I believe it
That.
was Stanford beating Arizona. I think one of
Okay.
them was a three seed and one of them might have been a one seed, but they were, and I think one of them beat UConn in the Final Four. So it was, those were definitely a surprise, yeah, but you definitely didn't have the top two. Yeah, Stanford was a one seed and Arizona was a three seed. And Arizona had beaten UConn and Stanford had beaten South Carolina. So I think maybe if the other teams in those semifinals had won, if it had been South Carolina, UConn instead, then it could have been the top two that year.
Now, I know the NFL's kind of gone to this format too, and I think the NBA still does it too. Or do you have any thought or that seeing where you say do we get to the Final Four, do you reseed the teams to kind of create that better championship if possible, or do you just kind of let it go as the brackets allows? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm more of the traditionalist, I feel, just keep the bracket how it is, but I do see the value in making the championship a little bit more interesting. If
Well, it would definitely complicate bracket pools.
sure.
I mean, I think it worked out this year. Like, although maybe you could have argued UConn as the top overall one seed should have played NC State, and Purdue should have played Alabama in that case. But I feel like when you get to the Final Four, even if an unexpected team or a few make it, you've got to be impressive to pull off as many wins in a row as you do. So like NC State obviously wasn't one of the top four teams during the regular season, but they were during the tournament. So yeah, I don't, maybe in a smaller league, like I can see the argument for it in a professional league where you only have about 30 teams and the distinctions can be more clearly seen between the top seeds. But in college basketball, I mean, where they're not even where, you know, there's hundreds of teams and you're not playing a majority of the all the other teams throughout the regular season. You know, there's just a lot of unknowns to that, and I'm satisfied with the way it is now. Mean, there's maybe other things that they can look at to mix it up, but I wouldn't recommend that option.
No, that's fair, because I know, and I'm sure you've seen it too or read about it, that interest in just, oh, do we expand the tournament to what? It's what, 72 or
I've heard
96?
96, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but
Well, I mean I'm not a, I mean, I'd love to watch more games. I still watch the NIT, just I love watching college basketball, not because it's necessarily, I mean, they have a few exciting games, but the you know, so if it does expand, I'll watch all the games and I'll figure out how to fill out my bracket, but I don't see the value of it unless you're bringing in more mid-major schools that aren't getting the opportunity. But it seems like that would not be likely what happens. Like whenever I've read about the people who are interested in expanding the tournament, it's like officials from Power Six conference schools who want to have more of the major conference schools in there because that gives them more revenue. And they've got enough. And in this era of major or conference domination, where you know the SEC and the Big Ten are like the only conferences left anymore, like they don't, that's not being motivated by the right ideas.
No, I agree. And even if it's something small, okay, say you want to expand it just a little bit, or I've always been a fan of put the last eight teams in the field in Dayton, and then have those mid-majors that won their conference tournaments as your 15s and your 16s, and don't have them play a play-in game. And I do get the argument on the other side of it. You do get that exposure for those teams. Like you had Howard playing Wagner, you had Grambling playing Montana State, and they got eyes from the entire country on them. But I don't know. I just feel like you should kind of allow that fairness to the smaller conferences and let them get one of those first games automatically in as well, and make
Yeah.
those teams who are scraping on the bubble kind of have to play their way into the actual thing itself. That would be the only thing I would consider them or hope that they would want to change, but.
I mean, I can see the exposure argument, and you know, the idea of letting the teams that win their conference tournament actually play the get the full March Madness experience and not just the first four experience. But I would also, I don't know if I would necessarily make this argument, but I would definitely throw it out there that I would actually go the opposite direction and say the last at large bids, if you know, if they're 11 seeds or 12 seeds, you know, they're ahead of the 16 seeds and the 15, 14, and 13 seeds. So they should be ahead of, they should already be in the field and not in the play-in. The play-in should be the very lowest seeds, whether they were conference champions or at large teams. And I mean, they're not going to be at large teams, like, unless all the small conference champions are somehow undefeated. But yeah, I mean, it's weird having 68 teams, like, just having to have playing games makes it so there, I don't think there's a fully satisfactory option. I don't know, maybe give the first four games some more media coverage, make them have them on CBS instead of True TV or something like the along those lines.
That's true too. Yeah, I mean, like, just anything, and even so, I mean, give those smaller schools a chance for the national TV spot as well. And yeah, I mean, that could be a big change too. That would work. Small, but massive for them, and just the profits those schools could see. Because I know even back here more locally, there was one year that Robert Morris, kind of the one of the small and forgotten Pittsburgh colleges, was in the play-in, and it was very true. Just the amount of admissions of the school increased. I mean, recruiting exposure profited from that too. So it does make a difference for those little teams that could be thrown on TV and kind of the bigger stage. So.
Speaking of first four games, so Howard and Wagner, you mentioned, was one this year. Did you see Colin Jost's post on Instagram about that game?
No.
So you watch SNL regularly still, right? So I mean, for any SNL viewers out there, you know that one of Colin, part of Colin Jost's persona on Weekend Update is that he's a total white bread guy who, you know, and who's like a white supremacist, not really, but he plays that part on Weekend Update. So he grew up on Staten Island, which is where Wagner University is, and then so he posted on Instagram, he's like, I'm rooting for Wagner to beat Howard and then to beat North Carolina in the 116 game, even though I grew up rooting for North Carolina. And he's like, I know that the optics of this are bad for me, rooting against an HBCU school like Howard. Look up Colin Jost's Instagram, go back through his posts from the past few weeks to get the wording of that correctly. But yeah, did you see any other interesting social media posts or any celebrity reactions to this year's tournament along those lines?
Nothing stands out to me. It probably wasn't, I guess, to my advantage either. But anytime, I mean, that to be watching social media for that sense. But anytime the tournament does make its way through Pittsburgh, I hole myself up and go. So I'm out of the loop kind of when that happens, and I'm just kind of numb to the fact that I just spent what 12 hours watching basketball one day, and then six the next, or the 2 days later. So felt
So,
like I
well,
was a little bit less on my social media game this year.
right. Well, there were some games in Pittsburgh this year. Did you make it to
I did.
the
I did.
okay?
I did the whole session, but both days worth. So I got treated to the NC State run from the beginning, and then I got one of the stories of the first day was the Oakland win over
Oh,
Kentucky.
nice. Oh man,
I
you
mean,
got to
not,
the that was then Pittsburgh was the best place to be. Didn't even
yeah,
realize.
because then you went back around on that Saturday as well, and we had NC State and Oakland went to overtime, and then Creighton, Oregon went to double overtime. So
Oh man.
got three extra bonus sessions out of that day
And we
too.
could
But
like rank which cities had the best experience for the in-person fans. And
I just feel
Pittsburgh sure sounds like it was number one this year.
Yeah, I feel spoiled every time it comes because they always sell out here. They fill the Penguins Arena, PPG Paints Arena, and they get over 18,000, and the place is full. I mean, the only sections that don't stay filled the entire time are the ones with the alumni and the families of the players, because they're kind of sectioned into each one of the corners of the arena. But there's nothing quite like when the lower seed has the higher team on the ropes, and I mean, The arena, which had its fair share of Kentucky fans that made the trip up, of course, but the entire place went pro Oakland very, very quickly. And
Were there any
so
Oakland fans? Because it's
that
Oakland from Michigan,
Oakland from Michigan. Oh
so
yeah,
it's not that far a trip.
no, you would see them around town for sure. Like they had their Oakland gear on and everything like that. But I thought one of the coolest things was like after Oakland lost to NC State, because they were the first game of that night, the one player for Oakland, his name was Jack Golkey. He's the one who hit all the threes to take Kentucky down. And I don't know how closely you watch this, Jeff, but you have to look at this guy's stat lines for the year. He attempted 8 2-point shots during the season and well over 200 3-pointers
For the whole
attempt. It's
season.
in the whole season. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Like you can find like his shot charts online, and it's unreal. Like he was a grad transfer from a Division II school, and Oakland's coach recruited him just for the purpose of his ability to shoot threes. And he's always the Oakland's coach, Greg Campy. He's been there for 40 years now.
Yeah.
He's the longest tenured D1 coach now that Jim Boeheim retired. He always has played an up tempo system. And he was looking for a sharpshooter, and he doesn't even start. But the way he was able to make threes, it was just fun to watch him in warmups too, just out there draining three after three after three. But anyway, after Oakland lost their Saturday night game, he went back into the crowd, like as the Oregon Creighton game was warming up, like in his full jersey, taking pictures with anybody and everybody. And you could tag on. Like with the hashtag like March Madness selfie to get on the big screen. It's all these people sitting in the lower bowl of PPG Paints Arena with standing next to Jack Golkey in his full Oakland uniform still. It's like, how did that happen? But no, it is. It's always so much fun to go to these games in person, because every time it's come to Pittsburgh, there's been a different kind of team and storyline that's come out of it. I mean, usually Villanova's been out here when they went through their runs, and then even the year that Villanova lost when they were in Pittsburgh, it was when the crying piccolo girl from the Villanova band made her famous appearance that stayed on social media for a while too. So we usually get something interesting to happen when the games appear out here. And I thought even one of the more interesting things that happened was the first game that I saw on that Thursday. Oh, let's see. I'm trying to go back through the day. Okay, the first game was Creighton against Akron. So it was a 3 versus a 14. And what should have happened? The Creighton dismantled Akron, and as the second half kind of got and the game got away from Akron, the one local team, Duquesne, who was actually the host for the games at PPG Paints Arena, Duquesne was playing their first round game. They were the 11 over this, and they were playing the 6 BYU, and Duquesne won. And this was the first time Duquesne won a tournament game since 1969. So anytime the arena could put the Duquesne game up on the Jumbotron, the place went nuts, because you had a lot of Duquesne alum who were there. Duquesne's campus sits a block away from PPG Paints Arena, and every time they took it off the screen, because they went back to full screen for the game that was currently being played on the court, you just heard the boos rain down from the stands. So once that Duquesne game ended, the place erupted. It was probably during the afternoon session, just the loudest cheers of the day, and nothing matched it until the craziness of Kentucky Oakland later that night.
Yeah, well, there were games in Brooklyn as well, but I didn't realize it until Selection Sunday. I checked the prices. The day sessions on Friday were like $40 or $50 for the cheapest seats. So if I wanted to take off work, it would have been not too difficult for me to go and just like a 15-minute subway ride away from me. But I decided I had some other plans, and I do like watching the games is at home so I can bounce around. But yeah, I could have seen James Madison beating Wisconsin at 12 over 5. But instead I caught that at home. Or did I catch? I went to see a movie on Friday night, so I might have caught that game on the app. Yes, some I know I said I watch as many games as possible, but sometimes I do take a movie break in between. So shall we get into how our brackets went this year? Did we make any good predictions?
Yeah,
This year, I
I have
think it was
not.
actually, I would guess most people did fairly well because a lot of the top seeds advanced pretty far.
Yeah,
But how did you do?
that's kind of how I feel. It was kind of just I don't want to say run of the mill kind of year, but I mean, I kept most of my Elite Eight for a fair amount of the tournament. Let's see. I got 12. I got the James Madison game right.
Did you pick Grand Canyon?
I didn't. I thought about it. I thought about Grand Canyon,
I
but
picked 3 12 seeds, and McNeese was the other one, and that did not work out as well, but I did get the two. And that made up for I the other close games. Like, I don't think I got any 7 10 games right. And I think I well, actually let me go grab my bracket quick.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say I can filibuster here too. Yeah, I'm not much better. Yeah, I only got Dayton right, and out of the 7-10 games, and I know Dayton was pretty close to losing that game. They had a furious comeback at the end to even win that one.
Oh
And
man,
then
that was such a heartbreaker for me. I had yeah, I mean, at least it was only one game that I lost there, but I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, but I mean, no, looking at everything else, I got half the 8-9 games right. I did pick Oregon over South Carolina, so I felt good about getting at least one 11 seed right. But I went New Mexico as well, and that was probably the most frustrating one. And there's always one every year, is I didn't pick Clemson out of
I
that
didn't
one.
either, yeah.
But it's like, okay, you know what, the next round I had New Mexico was my sleeper good to go to the Sweet 16 anyway, and Clemson took down Baylor, so that didn't really hurt me anyways in the long run. But
Yeah,
it was those two.
I was most, besides picking New Mexico, I was pretty chalky in that section of the bracket.
Yeah, and it always I always try to find every year like a two seed to go down in the second round. Well, that didn't happen this year. I feel like more years than not, a 7 or a 10 takes out a two. Or I always try to find that 11 to make it to the elite, or not to the elite, to the Sweet 16, or a 12 seed. I just didn't feel comfortable doing it anywhere. And I mean, of course, lo and behold, there was one. But I was impressed watching Texas Tech in the Big 12 tournament. So I figured out they'll take care of NC State. But no, I mean, that was such a good story too, as that
Well, I'm
unfolded.
glad I watched more of the ACC tournament than the Big 12 tournament because I did pick NC State. That was the only 6-11 game I got right. I didn't pick them any farther than that, but at least I picked them for one game. But yeah, I'm bearing the lead a bit because I'm actually in first place in two pools that I entered this year, and I will win. You will know if I've won, listeners, by the time this episode drops, because I will win if UConn wins it all. Someone can leap ahead of me if Purdue wins in both of these pools. But actually, in one of them, I'm winning outright, but in the other one, I'm tied for first. And the other person also picked UConn. So if UConn wins, it's going to come down to the tiebreaker of total number of points for the game. I think he picked 162, I picked 170. So as long as it's at least 167 total points, then I will win a bracket pool, I think, for the first time since 2009.
Yeah, I've got nothing. It's just a kind of a ho-hum year for me, and I don't have anything in tonight's game. People ahead of me have Connecticut, and that's who I have picked to win it all, or Purdue. So now it's just
Right.
on to next year for me. So
Okay, so you did you had you at least picked the right you picked UConn all the way. Who did you have them beating in the final?
I had Houston.
Okay. And what was the rest of your final four?
And then I had top right corner was Houston, bottom right Purdue, and then I had North Carolina bottom left, and then UConn.
You went with all the one seeds.
All the ones, and then, oh wait, no, I'm looking at the wrong spot. I'm sorry. I had Arizona in the bottom
Okay.
left. Yes, so three ones and a two. Yep.
All right.
I got hooked into the Arizona stays on the West Coast to play, and no, that didn't work. So
I went with Alabama out of that region, so that was what really helped push me over the edge.
Yeah,
But
and that was another one too, was trying to find the one seed that was going to go down in the Sweet 16, because I feel like that happens every year, and I didn't feel good about any of those picks, so I just kind of left it. So.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I think UConn and Purdue are too good for a lower seed to beat them. Houston, I wasn't that impressed with, but I wasn't sure who would beat them. North Carolina, I was like, they just snuck in as a one seed. And I like Alabama. They score so many points. And that worked out. Yeah, but speaking of the final, what do you think? UConn's a 6.5 point favorite, I think. I mean, against a team as good as Purdue, but I can understand why they've beaten everyone by double digits.
Now, this run reminds me of the run Villanova went on a few years ago. Few years ago, when they won their second title and they beat Michigan in the final. Now, granted, I
Yeah.
think Purdue's a lot stronger of a team than that Michigan team was, but no, I think UConn really matches up well with Connecticut, and then I mean I think Donovan Clingan kind of cancels out Zach Edey in a sense with just their size. It's going to come down to who can get who in foul trouble more than anything. But I just think
Probably.
Connecticut's secondary pieces are so much stronger than Purdue's, where I think that's going to make all the difference in the world. So, all right, and kind of along those lines too, Jeff. And speaking of their secondary pieces, where do you stand on Cam Spencer, seeing the fact that he is a former Loyola and Rutgers player? Is he a fan in your books, or are you kind of disappointed he's turned against some of your favorite programs there? Or
Well, I mean, I know when he transferred from Loyola to Rutgers, it was kind of a lateral move for me because, I'm a Loyola alum, but I also root for Rutgers because my dad went there. So I was like, well, he's not going to win a championship at Loyola. He's probably not going to make the tournament either. With Rutgers, he has a chance to do that. And then he caught the attention of, I guess, everyone there, because then he moves on to the defending champions. The way the state of college basketball is now, I don't hold any ill will against anyone moving on to whatever program makes the most sense to them. And, I'm like, he's a grad student now, so there's also an academic consideration. I don't know how much of a part that played for him. But, maybe it made more sense for him to continue school at UConn than it did at Rutgers.
Right.
I don't know. So, I mean, I enjoy watching him. It would have been nice if he had stayed with Rutgers because they took a back step this year. So I think they missed him a lot, as well as a few other guys who left. But yeah, I'm certainly not rooting against him. Let's put it that way.
So if I were to give my prediction, I'm going to say that UConn covers that 6.5, and it's one more double-digit win tonight. So I do think it will be high scoring. So your number total there, I feel like you should feel pretty confident about that. You've got two high-scoring teams there.
Well, I mean, that's what I figured. So I said 170. They're 6.5 point favorites, so I'll just stick with that. So I'll say they'll win 89 to 81, and they cover and they match my prediction perfectly.
Yeah, no, I'm about with you. I was gonna go pretty much along the same lines. I was gonna say Connecticut's gonna get into the 90s, though. I'm gonna go in ni 92 to 80. So we're kind of in that same ballpark for
Okay.
sure.
Well, either way, that works out for me. So,
Right, exactly. Yes.
all right. Well, should we move on to the stuff around the basketball, the TV presentation of it all and everything else that was going on?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Well, this was a unique year for March Madness because it was the first one in quite a while without either Greg Gumbel or Jim Nance. Jim Nance retired from March Madness announcing, and Greg Gumbel had a family health issue. I mean, they didn't go into details, but they announced that during Selection Sunday. But it was very odd not having him around in the studio. And although Jim Nance, he was around somewhat because he appeared in all those ubiquitous Capital One commercials. Ian Eagle, I guess, was upgraded to the number one play-by-play man, which I thought was a very well-deserved promotion. So what were your thoughts about those aspects?
It did feel weird not having Greg Gumbel there, especially once Selection Sunday rolled around. Now, once the tournament games got started, since Turner's taken over and they've kind of had the Turner guys in, it wasn't as noticeable. And Ernie Johnson is so good at what he does too. But I definitely felt the sting more of him not being there once the teams got picked. But I agree with you too. Ian Eagle was well deserved to take kind of that next step from Jim Nance. And a lot of times too, I know during the regular season, you get that number one CBS, the analyst crew with Bill Rafferty and Grant Hill. They'll call games where usually Jim Nance comes along or would come along closer to the tournament anyway. So there were a lot of games in the past years where Ian Eagle would kind of be that de facto number one during the regular season. So you could tell there was chemistry there already with the three of them calling games together, and just seemed like a seamless transition as well.
Yeah. Any favorite calls from Ian Eagle this year? Because I know I have one.
Nothing stands out to me. I mean, he's just a very solid announcer who does, I think he fits perfectly the college basketball game. I guess more than anything, I always enjoy his wedgie call when the ball gets stuck. But
well, I have that written down. He said a wedgie in the desert. Because the Final Four is in Arizona, so it was, I forget which game it was, but one of the semifinals, the ball got stuck in the rim. So perfect opportunity right there. Okay, so we kind of teased it at the beginning, said, should we rank our top five announcers? I wasn't ready, but could you come up with the top five all time on the spot?
Probably could here. I mean, I always enjoyed Gus Johnson, that's for sure. I'm disappointed he's not on the CBS crew anymore. I mean, he does well with Fox okay. And the Big East games usually.
You know, it'd be nice if they could work out a deal where they could loan him to CBS and Turner just for March and April.
Yes, I already mentioned Dick Enberg as well. So he was always another favorite of mine. If we're looking for not just play-by-play, but also analysts too, I think Bill Rafferty was always one of my favorites too, especially when he was paired with Vern Lundquist too. That pair together, I mean, I don't know if part of it too is just thinking of like Vern Lundquist calling golf tournaments as well, where just like he was very good at no matter what sport you gave him to, or I think about when he did SEC games also. And then, if I needed to pick one more, I'd probably go Ian Eagle, and Kevin Harlan's right there too. I love that there's a video online of, I guess there were the first game he called last season was a Furman over Virginia first round upset, and just watching him lose his mind as Furman made this crazy comeback at the end to beat UVA, and just the reaction of his two broadcast partners too while he was going nuts on the call. But
that was Harlan or Eagle?
That was Kevin Harlan. Okay. Yeah, he was paired with Stan Van Gundy and Dan Bonner last year, and just their facial reactions were great. Watching the game, the call on the court unfold, and then Kevin Harlan's losing his mind off to the side too.
Yeah, it's interesting having Stan Van Gundy as one of the color guys too, because he and his brother, they do not back off from criticizing. I mean, pretty much anyone. Like, they are among the most constructively critical color commentary guys in basketball nowadays. Okay. Anything else before we wrap it up? We've always got plenty to say. We're two of the maddest people this time of year. But anything before we wrap it up and get ready to watch tonight's game?
No, I mean, as always, we just have to hope that we get a good one shining moment at the end of the night here, and then we'll see what the craziness of the next few weeks in the college basketball world have happened here. I guess the big news with John Calipari moving yesterday, we're going to see how that shifts things here. And there's never a dull moment.
Where did he end up? I only just saw it on the ticker quickly.
Arkansas.
That is, oof.
Yeah.
That'll be something to get used to.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you kind of knew that maybe something was up after that last game that he lost, just the way he kind of walked off the court, kind of stunned at disbelief, like he's maybe realized this was the end. But it'll be an interesting next few weeks in the college basketball world too, even after tonight's done.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, the question for me is, will I stay up for one shining moment, or will I just record it and watch it in the morning? We'll see how that goes. Maybe I'll provide an update at some point. Okay. So do you have anything you'd like to promote or recommend that you can enjoy with your aunts and or nephews?
Cool. Gosh, nothing comes to mind. Does it have to be a show of some kind, or just anything?
It can
in
be
general?
Anything. Yeah, I didn't remind you of this part of the show since it was.
Well,
just
no, I mean, hey, I've been on long enough to know I can always think about something to promote here. Well, hey, as the spring weather has turned here, I think finally in Western Pennsylvania, taking advantage of the early dismissal today, my kids had from school, we busted out our portable pickleball net. So. I think whether you're 8 and 7 years old or 58 and 57 years old, it's going to be another great spring and summer of pickleball to come. So,
and do you have a pickleball court in your backyard?
Well, we make do with just chalk on the driveway, but it's been known to officially get the measurements down pat. So,
well, I mean, I would be nice for me to even have a driveway in Brooklyn, but. Maybe eventually someday I'll live somewhere with a driveway. But yeah, okay, pickleball. Just play it. Is watching it fun too?
I don't know. I've yet to say I've watched it on TV. I know it's on TV sometimes, but playing it's perfect. That's what I'll recommend.
I've watched a few pickleball events. Like the CBS had a celebrity tournament called Pickled. Emma Watson was in that, Paul Scheer and his wife, June Jayan Raphael, and Will Ferrell showed up. Stephen Colbert hosted it. And ESPN is at a few pickleball events with like former tennis players, McEnroe and Andy Roddick. And not Andy Roddick. I think Andy might have been an announcer on that, but he didn't play. Agassi played, and Steffi Graf, Maria Sharapova, and a few others. So Jeff Smith is recommending playing pickleball. I'm going to recommend watching pickleball as well. And I'll also promote our Patreon if you'd like to support us with a few bucks a month. And Ken Jeong, the invitation to appear as a guest on the show is open as always. And you can leave us a review. We'll read it on air if you'd like us to. And you can still follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And Jeff, thank you for making time again, once again. And I'll let you say some sort of farewell.
Always a pleasure, Jeff. I think I know probably about same place, same time period next year. Maybe not with an eclipse to talk about, but hey, we'll make it work. 2025 is right around the corner to talk some March Madness.
Very good. I've got it right down. I'm going to scratch my pen against right next to my microphone so that our listeners know it's going in my calendar. And then I'll say, keep your remotes handy and your eyes open.